AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. I'm very interested in a concept that I read about in the latest book from Sarah Wasserman, The Death of Things, Ephemera and the American Novel. It talks about how our literature has changed, and especially how we talk about things within literature. I'll get into it. It's a little weighty, but I tell you what, it's actually, I think, an important observation made by Sarah Wasserman, an assistant professor of English and Material Cultural Studies at the University of Delaware and a co-editor of the Cultures of Obsolescence, History, Materiality, and the Digital Age. And she's kind enough to join us to talk about the book. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me today.
Thank you very much for joining us. I want to start actually out with your job and the material studies. And also, it sounds like there's an institute at the University of Delaware that you're involved with as well that talks about material issues, right?
That's right. So I'm currently the associate director of the Center for Material Culture Studies at the University of Delaware, which has actually been around for 20, going on 21 years.
Wow.
And that term sounds funny, right? What is material culture? And it just breaks down into the two words in the term. So material, objects, artifacts, and culture, the way people interact with and make their world. So really, we are a group of faculty and graduate students and undergraduate students coming from all different disciplines, mostly in the humanities, studying how the objects that we use, that come up in the archives, that we dig up from history, how they make meaning and what they can tell us about the way that we live in the world now, we used to live in the world, we might live in the world in the future.
The idea of your book here that is interesting is ephemera. And I want, why don't you take a few minutes here and try to explain the best you can, because I find it wonderful when someone takes something very heady, very complicated, very, very thick as far as kind of an academic standard, but tries to convey it, because I think it does have cultural and societal importance. What you've discovered, I think, is very important for us actually to acknowledge. So why don't you just take a little bit and explain exactly what ephemera is?
Sure. Well, thanks for the kind words about the book and what I'm trying to do. And you're absolutely right to ask the question. All the time people say, ephemera, what are you actually talking about? It's a slightly esoteric term, and it comes from the Greek epi, which means on or upon. We know that from something like Epicurus. And hemera actually means day. So the term originally alluded to short-lived flowers and insects, like the mayfly, which are actually called ephemeroptera because they were thought to only live for one day. But basically around 1700 or mid-1700s, the term had broader application, and it especially referred to paper objects that aren't meant to last. So if you've ever had one of those calendars where you tear off one day at a time and, you know, you toss it in the trash after, that's a great example of ephemera. I'm expanding that definition a little bit in the book to think about all the different kinds of objects in our world that aren't meant to last. So ephemera, basically, for me, are objects that signal their own disappearance or destruction. They come to us in their way and they say, you know, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. So that includes things like ticket stubs and pamphlets, but also in the book, it can include things like pop-up spaces and billboards and signage in cities that don't last, that are sort of meant to turn over and disappear. And I'm really interested in why so many of our favorite, most famous novelists from the 20th century in America were actually writing about ephemera in their novels. They're giving us these literary portraits of disappearing objects, and I wanted to know why.
And it's that point there, which I thought was, wow, you didn't, you know, nailed it, is that you noticed in books, post-war, World War II books, that the way the authors talked about those things changed. And it really has changed today. I mean, it's a very different world in regards to literature today versus what it used to be.
That's right. That's right. And I'm happy to talk, you know, about the literature in particular and talk about these authors, whether it's Ralph Ellison or Philip Roth or Marilynne Robinson, who really write about these disappearing objects. But I think you're raising a broader point, which is probably very interesting to your listeners, about our relationship to objects right now. Mm-hmm. That ephemera, for me, feels like a really important concept, not only because it comes out of this literature where authors were looking at the world around them and in post-war America and saying, hey, nothing's built to last. Everything turns over. Everything changes. And what does that say about us? But you're also pointing to the fact that right now we're in a moment where so many of our objects feel fleeting. They feel transient, you know, digital objects in particular. Do they have a materiality? Are they ever really ours? So this concept of ephemera that I think 20th century fiction explains so well has a really contemporary weight to it also.
And you just, and one of the things you just said is kind of signified there is that it's a double-edged sword to a point. And on one side, it is the promise, the future, the American way, but it's also the lack of delivering on the future and the promise that, you know, it's not Star Trek out there. We're supposed to, where are the things that you wave over me that make me healthy? No, we don't have that. And so it's almost as a way, it is a really kind of a bittersweet sort of aspect of literature, because on one side of it, it is, you know, you can find great value in the fleeting things. You can as well, and they can have great significance and make wonderful plot points in these things, but they also do represent to a point the failure of society to achieve those weightier ideas that we've kind of come to expect. And instead of, you know, having the thing that makes me a beef Wellington every night just out of molecules, I got a bag of Funyuns from the 7-Eleven. And I mean, that's I think a bitterness that comes with that to a point.
I love the way you put this as saying it's bittersweet. And a great example that I talk about in the book is the 1939 New York World Fair. So the actual World Fair in 1939, it was called the World of Tomorrow. And there were these models of cities of the future. We were going to have hoverports and robots smoking cigarettes. And as you said, you know, a button you would press to make you your beef Wellington. And of course, not only did that not happen, but the fair closes and they melt down the structures, the buildings of the fair, and they turn them into metal for the war effort. So literally the dreams of tomorrow end up in bullets and steel casings for the war. And this is, I think, a really great example that gets captured in E.L. Doctorow's novel World Fair and Michael Chabon's The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. And these writers are really talking not about, ooh, these shiny promises, right? They're talking about how those shiny promises didn't come true and where we end up instead. So you're right that even while we might think about our own collections of ephemera, if you have, say, ticket stubs or something like that, they can be a really sweet reminder of things you've done in the past and experiences you've had. But they can also, as you're saying, at a bigger scale, be very bitter when they tell us some truths about where we are today with our material relations.
You bring up World's Fairs, and I thought that could that be the first real mega case of ephemera on the planet, was the World's Fair? When, because I remember reading a book about Garfield, and he was touring the World's Fair when he was getting ready to run for president. And he was talking about the big thing back then was they were trying to get doctors to wash their hands. I mean, that's kind of what they're, you know, you scrub your hands, it's a good thing. But they talked about the building where this was at was all long gone and all this stuff. And the same kind of concept. I remember reading the Devil in the White City about the Chicago World's Fair. And that most of that is completely gone as well. I mean, so is that, as you bring that in, I mean, I think that that's such a wonderful example of this, because quite literally it might be the largest scale exhibit of ephemera and probably one of the earliest versions of it that really kind of captures our modern mentality of it that is available.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, World Fairs are such interesting case studies because, of course, things do survive, whether it's the Ferris wheel in Chicago or the Space Needle in Seattle. But most of it and the event itself vanishes and disappears. So I think you're absolutely right that it is one of the earliest and simply most important, if you want to say monumental instances of ephemera, to say something a little bit paradoxical. But I would also, you know, say and pose as a question whether or not city spaces themselves, which we think of as kind of permanent. We think of them as landscape. We think of them as the space we inhabit where other things disappear, that city spaces are so often turning over and changing that they're another big scale, large scale instance of ephemera. It's what a lot of Europeans, when they came to this country in, you know, the 1900s, would comment on as being uniquely American. They would say there are no ruins and everything just gets torn down and disappears in American cities. And that's so strange. There's no sense of history. So I think once you take the concept of ephemera from that mayfly and that paper calendar, and you start to think about it not just as an object, but as a logic or as a relationship that we have to objects in this country, you can get very big with it quite quickly.
Two things about that. One, I talked to Larry Millett, who's an architectural writer out here. He used to work for the St. Paul Pioneer Press many years ago. And he talked about this with the Metrodome, when they tore down the Metrodome to build what's now U.S. Bank Stadium, where the Minnesota Vikings play. And I asked him about the historical nature. He goes, of course it's historical. The Rolling Stones played there. Twins won two World Series in the place. I mean, of course you are, but you're exactly right. That's gone. That's yesterday. We need to move on. And that does happen on a large scale event. And now that you pointed out, it really is. It is kind of the American way. The other one is this, and you'll get a kick out of this. I drive home every day from the radio station. I drive down KTEL Drive. Yes, that KTEL Drive, where the magic microphone and the pocket fisherman and all those things came from. And it is one of those things where the when you talk about this, I mean, we have a society that's almost based on this. It's easy to see how literature now. Once you pointed this out, it's so easy to see why literature has embraced this to a point, because it is what America has kind of become.
Yeah, you know, I think one, let me ask you a question that will seem like a tangent, but I think it's meaningful. Do you somewhere in your home have a box of either VHS tapes or DVDs or cassettes or CDs?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Okay. So almost everyone, at least everyone above a certain age, has one of these boxes. And every time you move, it's a crisis, right? Because you don't know, do I keep it? Do I throw it away? What do I do with this? And that's really related to this thing we're talking about, right? Which is the technology turns over so quickly, and then you have this remainder that you don't know what to do with. Ephemera are a little bit different because in theory, at least, you don't have that remainder. That, you know, if you don't have your iPhone 3 anymore, if you're on the 13, it's gone, it's away. And ephemera are objects that are designed to go away in that particular sense. And why I think literature is so good at teaching us about this is because when you read a book, it's not like your box of VHS tapes, hopefully for a number of reasons, but it's not like your box of VHS tapes or CDs, because the objects that are being described aren't actually there. An author might conjure them up and we imagine them in the course of reading the novel, but it's not like going to a museum where you see the object, or it's not like confronting that box of old media you have in your basement. So novels, I think, are very good at capturing not just what the ephemera were, what they looked like, what they meant, but also the way that their disappearance matters. That is, in a novel, you can also portray the lost. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying about many things is that we're not very good at as a culture necessarily at dealing with that loss, even though it's really baked into our way of being.
Mm-hmm. But if I may, when I talk about something like KTEL, that is, I think of that somewhat differently than a box of CDs, because I do have a box of CDs, and do I even have a CD player? Now, that's an interesting question, because I did have a CD player when I had all intention. I said, if I had to, you know, if for some reason the only technology that was working was technology from the 1990s, I'm good. But, you know, I still had that. The difference when I talk about stuff like KTEL, it was designed to be used. It was designed to be broken because it was made cheap and it wasn't made me used a lot. And sure, there might be a magic microphone in some, you know, history, you know, modern art museum someplace. But the reality is those things are not in boxes. They were made almost to be used, destroyed, thrown out, and gone. And I think that's what I'm talking about in that sense, is that VHS tapes or CDs, there still might be some continued value there, but no one has, you know, the love of an ancient piece of mail order technology that broke 5 seconds afterwards, and no one has anymore. I mean, that's kind of that part of which is gone, and yet you could still bring it back to the common cultural consciousness by including it in a book and say, oh, yeah, I remember when we had one of those. But no one would, you know, it's gone from most people's mindset as it is.
Right, yeah. And part of what you're making me think about is the fact that one reason why people are really drawn to ephemera. And so when I go to a place and I talk about my work, there are inevitably some people in the audience who have their prized ephemera with them, or they have a collection of ephemera and they want to talk about these things that they saved that they love. And what you're saying about KTEL and it's from its inception, it's designed to not necessarily last. You know, it can make a thing more precious as well. It can make something seem rare. It can be that sort of one time only, get here and interact with it before it's gone. Sometimes we're aware of that at the start and sometimes maybe less so. But it's not just that ephemera are designed to disappear and then become valueless. Mm-hmm. That they hold all different kinds of value. And the ones that last or that often remain, they do so because people see value in them, because they care. And I suppose that I'm interested in the very different ways in which ephemera can remain. They can be somewhere in a museum, they can be in a box at home, or in a different way, they can be stored, in a sense, in a novel.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think of, I mean, you talk about the author of the book from the World's Fair on 39, and how much you loved, and I saw one of your interviews and how much you really did enjoy the description of his second trip to the World's Fair. And yeah. And I saw that was kind of interesting. Who do you think today, as far as authors, capture this idea best right now?
Ooh, people writing right now?
Yeah.
That's a great question. So I suppose my attention and interest since completing this book has turned more toward novels that are explicitly about the internet. So they aren't necessarily writing about ephemera in the way that the authors in my first book are, but they're still thinking about what lasts, what remains, what disappears, and in particular, what does the internet do to all of these concepts of preservation and memory and
yes.
endurance. And so I've been reading a lot of novels on that topic lately. I've been reading Patricia Lockwood and Lauren Euler, who are two young female authors writing about, in different ways, how everything is ephemeral on the internet, including our own identities. I really liked a book by Hari Kundru that called Red Pill, which is about conspiracy theories and whether or not we can trust any of our own impulses about what's real, including the material world. There's a lot of interesting fiction, I think, being written that addresses the concepts of the book, if not the material dimension, so directly.
Do you think, as you brought that up, do you feel as if there's an element of epiphany that comes through for the characters of these novels that makes that the ephemeral element of it, you know, work better? I mean, there it does feel like that is part of it, is that. Yeah, as we talked about before, the feeling, the failure of the promise of the future, that sort of thing is a context that's used. And do you feel as if an epiphany generally is kind of in conjunction with it in the books?
Oh, you're such a good reader. If only all readers were like you. Yes, my simple answer is yes, and the longer answer is simply that even if it's not presented as a dramatic, you know, lightning bolt over the head kind of epiphany, that I do think characters in novels, once they recognize that the material world is not permanent, that it also disappears, it is also transient, they start to learn the lesson that letting go of things is as important as holding on to them. And that can be a really poignant and painful lesson, but I think that's the kind of epiphany that many of the characters in these novels have, mm-hmm. where our impulse to grasp to things so tightly, the events in a novel will teach characters, and the ephemera in a novel will teach characters that they need to let go of things.
The minute I read about this and you talked about this, I started reading about this with your book. Now I can't not see it. Everything post-war. I mean, it is because it's interesting you bring up the post-war generation because of that generation. They came back from World War II, and it was suburbia, and it was the microwave oven, and it was all these things. I mean, there was that promise, and it does not surprise me that's where it began and where it's gone today. Wow.
Yeah, it's, you know, people who work in different periods of literature will say, we did this first, the modernists did it better, or the medievalists did it better. But what you're talking about, and what I address in the book, is in America at this time, we became a disposable culture. Not even the Great Depression could slow down Americans' desire for disposable goods, you know, paper plates and TV dinners. And there was something about this at this time that I think seemed really high tech. We weren't thinking about the environment, and we weren't thinking about planned obsolescence and how we were going to have to buy new gadgets all the time. We were enamored, I think, with the way that you could just have new things all the time and the old ones seem to disappear. So I do think there's a very historically and culturally specific dimension to this preoccupation with ephemera.
You and I, before we started talking, we talked about how it used to be about, you know, Citizen Kane was about Rosebud, which was a sled. Now it's today. And I said Funyuns, and then you beat me by a mile. You said it's actually a digital picture of Funyuns. And I said, yeah, there you go. I think that captures it pretty well. And the reality is it depends on how much you like Funyuns. And I think that's kind of the way the modern world works, is that you can have these differencing things and kind of this ephemera and this disposable nature of our society. But if you're happy, is it for anyone to really criticize? I don't know. I don't think so.
I think that we all have an imperative to criticize Funyuns. No, I'm joking. But I think that whether or not you like Funyuns, I appreciate what you're saying, which is we shouldn't judge. Don't yuck anyone's yum. Don't judge people's attachments. But I think the digital picture idea is so fascinating, because my sense is that we have a double-edged anxiety about the internet and materiality. That on the one hand, we feel like, oh my gosh, if I post something to the internet or someone else posts it, I'm never going to be able to delete it. There have been legal battles over this, right? That your old Friendster account is still online, your Picasa account is floating around somewhere and you cannot get rid of it. So everything seems permanent, stored in the cloud, stored in this infinite storage. And on the other hand, it all seems entirely immaterial. Your photo album on your phone doesn't feel like a photo album you might have had in a bound binder with actual printed photographs. And so we're stuck in this moment, I think, where we don't quite understand whether or not things are truly material or truly immaterial. And that feels really contemporary. It feels really unique to the digital moment. But it's an old dynamic. It's the same dynamic that people in the 50s and 60s were writing about in novels about their objects.
And it's interesting when you put it back. I'll give you a great comparison of that. Go look at a letter to home from the Civil War. And it's like, my dearest Charlotte, it's been a tough campaign in the wilderness. Today, because of that, and I, just by what you just described, it's kind of like, it's hot here and it sucks. And it's a text message. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where things have changed dramatically. I really want to encourage people to get this book. And I know, like I said, it is a thick subject. But my gosh, I think it gives you a better perspective of our modern culture. Modern literature, for sure. For sure. But as well, it goes even beyond that. And I think it makes us, at least for me, I think it makes me understand myself better, which I think is a good part of the book. If it can resonate like that, I think it's an important thing. The Death of Things, Ephemera, and the American Novel, Sarah Wasserman. Sarah, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I'm glad to chat with you.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.